All right, we are going to continue our series in 1 Corinthians. So we've been going through the book of 1 Corinthians. And let's see, last week we talked about lawsuits among the believers and how Christians need to treat one another. Should Christians sue Christians? I guess we forgot that study. Is that something Christians do? Okay, can Christians go to court to sue people? Hey, they're not a Christian. Paul said you can use the liberties, the laws to benefit your situation. So what we're seeing here after discussing this order in the church, Paul deals with a list of questions that the Corinthians had sent him, including subjects on marriage, singleness, eating meat offered to idols, priority in worship, orderliness in the Lord's Supper, spiritual gifts, and the resurrection. So there are a lot of questions that the Christians in Corinth had. And as we said last time, there's another letter that had been written that we don't have access to. And Paul was writing these letters in response to what they asked. Now, you know, they were young Christians. They were trying to figure out life. They were trying to understand what is the way to live. And they had questions about marriage. They wanted to know, what was God's expectation regarding marriage? Now, are there any people who have questions about marriage out here? Not really. Okay, but we're going to learn some things anyway. Because the honest truth is, if we have a desire to be married, we need to start understanding biblical marriage before we go to the altar. We need to have a understanding of biblical marriage before we go to the altar. If we are married, we need to have an understanding of what God's expectations are regarding biblical marriage. So that's what we're going to look at today. Now, what was it that Paul had to deal with? First of all, this was a Greek society. These were philosophers, and they had all these worldly wisdoms and insights that they had come up with. You had the Stoics, who believed that life was just miserable, it was hard, it was depressing, it was negative, and the best thing you need to do was to chant and meditate to overcome. A lot like Buddhism. It's just everything's bad. You got to escape this reality. Then you had the Gnostics, who taught all flesh is evil. Flesh is bad. And they had a problem with Jesus coming in the flesh because flesh is evil. That's what the Gnostics taught. Then you had the Epicureans say, you know what? Life is short. Time is short. Do whatever you want to do, except do it to the fullest. So have zero guilt about whatever you are engaged in. In fact, do not allow a God to make you feel guilty. So this is what they grew up with. It was kind of like today, trending topics. When you go online, you see what the hot topics are. Well, these were the hot topics for the Corinthians. Okay, so I'm a Christian, but I hear about Gnostics. I'm a Christian, but, you know, the Stoics have a teaching. I'm a Christian. Epicureans have a teaching. So what is right? What should I do? Just like today, there are a lot of people who have opinions about relationships. There are a lot of people who have opinions about marriage. And unfortunately, sometimes we as Christians get caught up in the worldly knowledge and we lose sight of what the Bible is saying. Are you all with me out there? Okay, so we're going to go back. What's that first slide, Dale? In order to understand a relationship with God, you have to understand the concept. We looked at this last week. Do you not know that your body is a temple of the Holy Spirit who lives in you, whom you have received from God? You are not your own. You were bought at a price. Therefore, glorify God with your body. That is the premise of living the Christian life, and we call it lordship. That we cannot live the Christian life holding on to what we think is best. First of all, we need to take care of our bodies. Why? It is the temple of the Holy Spirit. So what that means, becoming a Christian, a part of God comes to reside in us. This had never happened before. That's what makes Christianity so unique. A part of God. So all of us who are Christians have divinity living inside of us. You are not your own. We were bought at a price. And what was the price? The cross. To become a Christian, Jesus had to suffer and die. So because of what Jesus did, the scriptures say, honor God. So as we wake up in the mornings, what should we think about? Well, you know, am I going to bring honor to God? Not am I going to be a church member? Not am I going to do the bare minimum to make it to heaven? But really, am I going to honor God? And I think if more of us live that lifestyle where we're honoring God, then we will do better with temptations and struggles. Because when we just focus on ourselves and we think about ourselves, sometimes we give ourselves a pass and we make excuses for ourselves. Anybody ever go through that? You know, it's like, I'm going through something. I had a bad day. But when we start making it about, you know what? It's bad, but I'm going to honor God today. Now, that's called self-denial. I don't feel like honoring God every day because people get on your nerves. Life gets hard. Sometimes you're tired. But we got to remember, we were bought at a price. So what, in order to understand biblical marriage, we have to understand it's about honoring God. As Christians, our marriages should bring honor to God. Now, I don't care how many ways Americans try to redefine marriage. Let me let you in on a little secret. There's nothing new under the sun. There's nothing new under the sun. I know Americans, we are the wisest, smartest, most intellectual people who ever lived, but there's nothing new under the sun. Because even in the first century, they were trying to define what marriage is. Now, in 1 Corinthians chapter 7, verse 1, now for the matters you wrote about, it's good for a man not to have sexual relationships with a woman. This is in the NIV. But since sexual immorality is occurring, each man should have his own sexual relations with his own wife and each woman with her own husband. I think in some translations it said it's not good to marry. I think it says that in some translations. But because there was so much immorality, and remember we're talking about Corinth here, in verse 3, the husband should fulfill his marital duty to his wife, and likewise the wife to her husband. The wife does not have authority over her own body, but yields it to her husband. In the same way, the husband does not have authority over his own body, but yields it to his wife. Do not deprive each other, except perhaps by mutual consent and for a time, so that you may devote yourself to prayer. Then come together again, so that Satan will not tempt you because of your lack of self-control. I say this as a concession, not as a command. Now, as you read through Paul's writings, there are writings where Paul makes it clear this is a command from God. It's non-negotiable. And then there are other things where it is really spiritual opinion. The Apostle Paul throws some things out there and he says, you know, it's something you need to think about. So one of the things he says, you know what, regarding marriage, Paul would say, it's better not to get married. No amens on that, but that was Paul's opinion. It's just probably better not to get married. However, if you do get married, there's some things you need to think about. So, you know, it's very interesting because it's in the Bible, verse 2. But since sexual morality is occurring, each man should have his own relations with his wife. So, you know, I think in some translation, I think maybe the King James Version, it says it's better to marry than to burn. I remember I introduced my girlfriend, Sean Reed, to my grandmother. And I said, yeah, this is my girlfriend. And one of the things she said, well, it's better to marry than to burn. Thank you, Grandma. Wasn't quite going there right now, but I appreciate you looking out for me. Now, the question is, people want to know, was Paul married? Was Paul married? Was Paul ever married? Paul is speaking, and usually when God uses people, he uses people who probably have had some experience with what they're talking about. Okay, Paul was a member of the Sanhedrin. If you look in Acts chapter, I think it's 8. In order to be a member of the Sanhedrin, in Jewish tradition, you had to be married. Most Jewish males ended up getting married about the age 18. So Paul was probably at one point in time married, because when we get to the part about being single, he throws in there being a widower. So it's probably a good speculation that Paul, at one point in his life, was married. He doesn't talk about a wife, but he has a lot of insight as to what marriage ought to be like. Because some people have this mindset that Christianity is kind of negative towards relationships. It's negative towards women. It's negative towards marriage. And what we got to understand is we can't take our cues even from the religious people of the world. We got to go back and study out the scriptures. Okay. What Paul was saying, what's the next slide, Dale? Okay, yeah. God's view of marriage. What's the next slide? Okay. In America, we have been told over and over and over that the divorce rate is 50%. How many of us have heard that? That 50% of all. But in reality, I found this in the Huffington Post, about 70% of marriages that began in the 90s reached their 15th anniversary, up from roughly 65% of those that began in the 1970s and 80s. And couples who wed in the 2000s are divorcing at even lower rates. I thought about that as I found that research. And I thought about my roommates. When I lived in New York City as a single man, there were about five of us in an apartment together, sometimes six, because rent is so high. And I thought about the guys who all got married around the same time, and most of us are still married. That was in the 90s. Most of us are still married. I thought about, you know, my wife's roommates. Think most of them are still married. And this was in the 90s. And then I've had conversations with my students, the guys in their 20s. And you know what 20-year-olds are telling me? They want to get married, but they want to be married once. And they want to stay married. They don't want to get divorced. And I'm like, this is good for guys in their 20s. First of all, they want to get married. But number two, they take it serious. They say they want to stay married. Now, what this says, the fact that people are marrying later in life, resulting in more mature marriages, has helped matters too. The median age for marriage in the 1950s was 23 for men and 20 for women. In 2004, 27 for men and 26 for women. So do I have any 27-year-old brothers out there? You're 30, okay. You're 28. Y'all 28 now? It's time. It's time, okay. But what I love about it, I have guys in this room who want to be married. And that's encouraging things because there are a lot of guys who don't want to be married. So I'm proud of you. I have women who want to be married. So take notes today so that way you can start praying now and preparing yourself. I think one of the things that happened, we transitioned out of that 70s generation where everything was a sexual revolution, the feminist movement. There were so many movements going on where family and marriage was devalued. So, you know, 20 years later, those kids who grew up in that household where they never saw healthy marriage, they wanted something different. So you're talking about by the time they got to the 90s, it was time for them to get married. And they said, you know, I want to be married. So here we are. We have this new trend now. People want to be married. I want to show you this clip because I want you to see also how God is working and making a difference in people's lives.
This morning, I want to encourage you, resist the temptation to be superficial. You already took that first step. You risked it. You came to a room where you knew that no matter what, people were going to look at you and say, oh, there's a problem in your marriage. That's the reality. Why are you here? There's a problem in your marriage. But the good thing is we're all in this together. So guess what? We all have problems in our relationships. And it could only get better. But I want to encourage you, resist the temptation to be superficial.
And Marco says something about courageous conversations. I don't know if anybody ever heard of this term, but we use this in the clinical world a lot. But it's not really a clinical term. We call it the pink elephant in the room. Anybody ever heard of that?
Oh, yeah.
Pink elephant in the room? It's kind of like if you can imagine a pink elephant in your living room and you get home from work. Now this big old elephant is sitting up in your living room. It's right in front of the door, as a matter of fact. In fact, you walk around it. Then the next person comes in, they walk over it, or they jump over it, or they go under it. And then you go about your daily business, and when you're fixing dinner, or you're, you know, going and getting a snack, or you're going to read a magazine or something like that, and it's 9 o'clock. Pink elephant's still there. Nobody's talked about the pink elephant. Nobody said, you know, hey, babe, did you see that pink elephant in the living room? And the truth is exactly what Mr. Markle said, that sometimes we're so fearful about what is going to come about if we have the conversation about the pink elephant, that we'd rather avoid it and deal with the known hell that we're in, rather than move towards an unknown heaven in our relationship.
Glad you brought up the subject of being transparent.
Thank you so much.
We hide stuff.
And really, that's our brother Marcos Mercado, and he'll be here in a couple of weeks for our Miracles Weekend. And Marcos is on the radio every Saturday preaching the word about marriage, using scriptures, preaching the word about marriage. I met Marcos in the South Bronx. He was 16 years old. He became a Christian. And now his ministry, he and his wife's ministry, has become that of married people. They're passionate about helping marriages. The point I'm making is this: the world lines up to get help. Sean and I have gone to these events. I mean, people who are not even a part of this fellowship show up, ask questions to get help. And really, that's how we got to approach marriage. Where can we go to get help? And for those of us who are married, there are a lot of people out there who just want help. We got to build the relationships so that we can have good, healthy conversations about marriage. You know, the first thing that Paul did in 1 Corinthians chapter 7, verses 1 and 2, Paul made it clear, it is good for each husband to have his own wife and a wife her own husband. You know, the first thing Paul did, he preached against polygamy. He preached against polygamy. In the Roman world, a man had a wife who cooked, a wife who took care of the kids, and a wife who cleaned up. Rod, you're looking shocked. I mean, what's on your mind, boy? No? Okay. Stay with me. That's what he had. He had a wife who cooked, wife who cleaned up, so he had multiple wives. And then he would have excursions at the temple, sleeping with the temple prostitutes. So in essence, when Paul came along, he said, listen, that's not what marriage is about. First of all, we're going to get rid of polygamy. That is not righteous. And then he goes on, and let's look over in Ephesians, because Ephesians 5, really, Paul makes it very clear the mindset about marriage. Now, what Paul also did, he elevated the status of women. In the first century, women were considered to be chattel. You had a mule, you had a horse, you had an ox, you had a wife. That was the mindset. They just were a part of being owned. But Paul said, you know what? We're going to elevate marriage. So in Ephesians 5, in verse, 22, wives, submit to your own husbands as to the Lord. No amens on that. Okay, let's talk about this. Is there anything difficult in what you just saw? Wives, submit to your husbands. Okay, some sisters not even smiling. Okay, let's talk about this a little bit. Ephesians 5:21 says, submit to one another out of reverence for Christ. What does that word submit mean? Okay, anybody? No, nobody have an idea? Come under? Yeah, I really want to answer. Yield to who? Yield to the will of your husband. Is that what you said? Of another? Okay, all right. Wow, I'm glad we're having this little talk. Wanda's smiling now. She's smiling, Cliff. She's smiling. All right. I've read and I've done some research on this, and what it said in Bible.org, which was really, really encouraging, because I think sometimes we get tripped up in words, and we see this word submit, and we get an attitude, and we get upset, and On the outside, we smile, but on the inside, they're like, ain't nobody telling me what to do. Ain't no man putting me under his foot. Mm-mm-mm-mm. And you know what? That word also means prioritize. Prioritize. Wives, prioritize your own husband. That's what Paul was trying to convey. Once you get married, your spouse is not on the to-do list. Not on the to-do, it's a priority. That's what Paul was saying. Wives, prioritize your husbands, for the husband is the head of the wife, as also Christ is the head of the church. Dale, I think I got another slide up here that will probably help us out. Secular submission is more about authority. Biblical submission is more of priority. Now, does that help us out, sisters?
Yes.
Okay. All right. So from now on, when we talk about submission in weddings, we're not talking about just get up and cook and clean and do what that man tell you to do. Although it wouldn't be that bad. But anyway, we'll just. Secular submission is more of authority. Brothers, we have lost the battle when we're in a discussion with our wives and we say, you just need to submit. So if you are single and you say, one day I want to be married. Once you get into that argument, because it is coming, the last thing you need to say is, woman, you just need to submit. Because that one won't go down that well. And women have long memories and they're going to remember that for a very long time. So you may want to say, you know what? Can you prioritize me, prioritize this relationship? Can we just work on this together? Yeah, you just got to be a little bit. Guys, you know what it's like when you're dating? You say the nice things, the encouraging things, the winning things. You know, sometimes in marriage you feel like, and I've been guilty of it, we're married now. I put the work in. But you got to keep saying those words. You got to keep working on it, okay? All right, so secular submission is more of authority. Biblical submission is more of priority. Let's go back to that other slide, Dale. So what else did Paul talk about? Now, this is the challenging one in verse 25. Husbands, love your wives just as Christ also loved the church and gave himself up for her. Wow, husbands, love your wives just as Christ loved the church. What does it mean to love our wives? And reality, she's got to tell you. I think I'm going to let my wife preach the rest of this message here. Okay, after being married a number of years, I've learned my definition of love and her definition of love sometimes can be two very different things. And if you are single now, I want to let you know ahead of time, you need to start figuring out what is your significant other's love language. What makes them feel loved? Because if you are trying to love them the way you feel loved, then you usually have a few conflicts in there. So, you know, there's a good book by Gary Chapman, The Five Love Languages. There's a lot of good books out there that talk about, you know, as you get to know someone, you need to love them for them. Number one, love them for them. Once you say I do, you did it. And as one of the prophets said long ago, love the one you're with. Don't be looking around talking about I need somebody else. Love the one you are with. All right? You said that's it. Y'all are together now. You got to figure out how are we going to make this work? How is it going to be great? Okay, so I got to make you feel loved. That's our number one responsibility, husbands. Now, just as Christ loved the church, I don't know about you, but that's a high calling. Yes. Think about the church. What type of people are in the church? Wonderful people. Encouraging people, friendly people, serving people, selfish people, people with attitudes, people who have bad days. Does Jesus love the church when the church is just doing well? He loves the church. Well, how do we know he loved it? It says that he gave himself up for her. Jesus died for the church. What does that mean? Husbands, we got to die for our spouses. What does that mean? Your dreams become secondary. Your emotions become secondary. Your comfort becomes secondary. That's what Jesus did. Jesus said, Father, if there's any other way, I can accomplish your will, but not my will, your will be done. You notice Jesus said, I'm going to be second, and the church is going to be first. That's really what Paul was saying. Okay, if you take that step to marriage, that Paul said in the beginning, it's better not to get married. But if you're going to do it, you got to do it the right way. And she has to be the priority. Now, for many, many years, we would have conflict in our marriage. And the greatest conflict was my wife didn't feel loved. Now, I was expressing love. I was showing love. And for me, you know, when I feel loved, there's a good meal on the table. House is clean. I feel loved. So what would I do? I would cook and I would clean. And my wife was like, we need to spend some time together. We need that. I'm not feeling loved. Look at this clean house and this big meal. And then it took a while for me to figure out she has a different love language. It's not gifts. It is quality time where we can talk. Well, where she can talk and I can listen. I mean, hours and hours and hours of uninterrupted communication. Hours of uninterrupted, but that's how she connects. And it could be something simple, just going to the supermarket together. Something really simple, just going out. But it took me a while to figure that out because for many years, she thought my love language was hours of communication. Bottom line is this. Y'all know me. I just say it. I get to the point and I'm moving on. I mean, you know, I don't have to keep talking about it over and over and over. But what when you're in a relationship, and that's what Paul was talking about. You know, the biggest problem is too many people bail out before they figure out what it takes. It takes work. And that's what Paul was trying to help them understand. If you want a healthy marriage, you got to be invested for the long haul. And then he went on to say that the goal is to present our wives radiant before God. So that's what Paul was talking about. And that's what a lot of people miss when they don't know the background and the history and when they jump to conclusions about marriage. Paul was like, listen, she's not your cow. She's not your chattel. She is your partner. So we're going to elevate the status of women. And once you get married, she becomes your priority. That's what Paul was communicating. Now, we can keep on reading here. Y'all following me out there? You see where we're going with this? So then Paul goes on to say, in verse 7, I wish that all of you were as I am, but each of you has your own gift from God. One has this gift, another that. What was Paul saying there? He said, listen, I'm not married and I'm fine. Some people can live that way. I'm not married and I'm fine. I don't really need anybody. I'm cool. I can just have friendships. And Paul said that is a unique gift from God. And he says, I wish that all of you were as I am. No amens on that, but we're going to keep it going. But each of you has his own gift. In verse 8, now to the unmarried and to the widows. That's why he probably was a widower. I say, it is good for them to stay unmarried as I do. But if they cannot control themselves, they should marry, for it's better to marry than to burn with passion. In verse 10, to the married, I give this command, not I, but the Lord. So he makes it clear now. This is coming from God. A wife must not separate from her husband, but if she does, she must remain unmarried or else be reconciled to her husband, and a husband must not divorce his wife. What was Paul saying to Christians? And this goes back to the old covenant in the book of Malachi. Guess what God said? I hate divorce. That's what God said. I hate it. I don't want it to happen. Now, there have been people, ministers who didn't understand, who gave very bad advice. Like if a young Christian couple who had gotten converted out of the world, came into the church, and they had been divorcees, some ministers have advised, go back to your original spouse. That's a disaster in the making. Because when we're in the world, God gives us a lot of grace. A lot of times, we don't know what we're doing. We don't know the decisions we're making. We don't understand the gravity of what we're doing. That's where grace comes in. Some of you have been married before, now you're remarried. Now that you're in the church, you're in the Lord, do it the right way. For those of us who are in the church, do it the right way. That's what the Bible is teaching here. Now, I have known of situations when there have been people who were Christians and they just wanted out. They just wanted out. So they look for ways to get out of their marriage. And there are only two options. Well, they couldn't kill him. Or marital unfaithfulness. There have been people who intentionally committed adultery. So they say, oh, got to dissolve this. And you know, they got the answer to God. I'm not God. There are some things I do not feel I have to have the final say on. But all I know is God is serious about this commitment we call marriage. So that means when we decide that we want to go that direction, we got to make sure we're righteous in the eyesight of God. Now, it goes on to say here in verse 13, what to do if one is a believer and not a believer? How do you handle that? Well, Paul says, first of all, in verse 12, this I say to the rest of you, I, not the Lord, if any brother has a wife who is not a believer and she's willing to live with him, he must not divorce her. What was happening in the church? A brother, you know, he's there in the fellowship. His wife, she's not a Christian. Brother's looking. He see all these Christian women. He's like, wow, I can have one of them. She's respectful. She loves her children. She loves her husband. And I got to go home and deal with this girl I found on the street when we were out there clubbing. Now I'm stuck with her. Nah, I'm a divorcer. Get one of them Christian women. Paul said, Paul said, if she is willing to live with you, y'all together. Oh, man, come on, Paul. Nope. And in verse 13, if a woman has a husband who is not a believer and he's willing to live with her, she must not divorce him. Okay. Because in verse 14, for the unbelieving husband has been sanctified through his wife, an unbelieving wife has been sanctified through her believing husband. Otherwise, your children would be unclean. But as it is, they are holy. What does that mean? I have no idea. But it works. Now, in verse 15, but if the unbeliever leaves, let it be so. The brother or sister is not bound in such circumstances. God has called us to live in peace. So, a woman becomes a Christian. She's living a Christian life. She's serving. She's loving God. And her husband doesn't like it. And he leaves. Paul said, you can't do nothing about that. Let him go. Vice versa, if it's the wife, let him go. You know, and let me help you out, single people. I think there's some confusion at times about dating. First of all, people say, well, dating's not in the Bible. That's not true. It's called relationships. Relationships. One another relationships. There is a way that you function in order to build a marriage. And before you build a healthy marriage, you got to have a healthy dating relationship. Nothing magical is going to happen when you say, I do. In fact, the opposite happens. Because the world and Satan hates marriage, you will be attacked more and more and more. So what that means is, as you are dating, you want to find the most spiritual person you can find. Because the two are striving to become one. And that is a challenge. Two separate, men and women are just different. I don't know if you figured it out yet, and I'm not talking about anatomy. Just different. Just the way we see life, the way we process things. And if you don't have a spiritual foundation, you will say, I do, and you will get there to that house and be miserable. Miserable. And I've seen it happen. People go out into the world, they find somebody, then they're like, bro, I need to get with you because I need help. Okay. You know, first of all, they need to convert her. Who is they? You know, she doesn't listen. Are you surprised? You didn't listen to God. And it's like people have set themselves up and they have had misery. I heard of one situation. This is the wildest situation I ever heard. But you know, when you do ministry in the hood, it's just like that. A woman had put a hit out on her husband. Was she a Christian? That's to be questioned. One guy who's a minister now, I've met him at seminars, and before he became a Christian, he put a hit out on his wife. Let me tell you, it's real out there. Some of us, we are enamored by good looks. Boy, you see her? At cookout? Chick-fil-A? In the mall? Red Lobster? She is looking good. She got on a blue dress. But you know, she may be a devil. Y'all see that guy? He's driving that Beamer. He's all buffed. He just left LA Fitness. And you're smiling at him, and he's smiling at you. You don't know. He may be crazy. He may be crazy. There's some crazy people out there. You don't know. Not everybody who's buffed is crazy, but a lot of them on steroids, they're crazy. What is the point I'm making? Once you get into this relationship, you really can't expect anybody else to fix your relationship. If you were not humble at the beginning, and then you go into this relationship, then Bible says you reap what you sow. And you just got to stick it out. Now, you can do it the Bible way and build healthy relationships. Now, I have older single people out here. This is how you handle it. You find someone you're interested in, bring them to church. Bring them to football parties. Get to know them. Let them meet your friends. I get very concerned when you find somebody and they don't want to meet your friends. Or they don't want to meet your family. This is your family. If this is the most important thing in your life and they don't want to have nothing to do with it, wow. I'm sorry, I just could not be interested in anybody who wasn't interested in what I'm trying to do spiritually for God. So, people say, well, what about us? You know, we're older. There are older people out there who love God. Get to know them. But just because they go to church, you got to watch that thing. If people just want to be, I just want to know you. I want everybody to find somebody, but it's not worth your soul. Not worth your soul. And There's some mature people out here. We have been in enough crazy relationships that we don't want that drama. Because the question I used to ask when people showed up to the church single and they were older, well, what happened before? What's going to be different this time around? Because we are creatures of habit. You know, I have known, this was one of the wildest situations. I tell you, life in the hood is funny. So there was this guy. We had a party. His brother had become a Christian, and he brought his, this brother had become a Christian. He brought his physical brother. His physical brother came in and brought his second wife. Well, the first wife was at the party also. And you know, at that time, when I was 30, I didn't have a filter. They were both standing there. And I'm like, y'all look alike, and y'all got on the same outfit. And they basically had on the same outfit. And it came out before I read, ooh. So many times, I said, y'all are dressed alike. So many times, you know what people do when they get divorced? They go and find somebody exactly like the one they had before. They do that. They go and find somebody exactly like the one they had before. What does that mean? That means just stay invested. Now, for those who are dating, thinking about getting married, it's going to be hard. It's going to be, goodness, Misty, you just got married. Oh, my, you're going to get it when you get home. So I'm just, Avis, he was just saying amen. That's all he was saying. But it's about growth. You ask any young married couple in here, have you grown since you have gotten married? Haven't you grown, Ray Edwards? Aren't you a different man? Aren't you a better man? Jordan gave you two thumbs up, so you did well. But it's about growth. That's all I'm saying. I don't want us to be afraid of marriage. At the same time, I don't want us to be unrealistic. It's about spiritual growth. Now, when you get down here to verse 25, it says concerning the unmarried. And we're going to go ahead and wrap it up. I'm sorry I went a little long today. Now about virgins, I have no command from the Lord, but I give a judgment as one who by the Lord's mercy is trustworthy. Because of the present crisis, I think that it's good for a man to remain as he is. Are you pledged to a woman? Do not seek to be released. Are you free? Are you free from such a commitment? Do not look for a wife. But if you do marry, you have not sinned. And if a virgin marries, she has not sinned. But those who marry will face many troubles in this life. And I want to spare you of this. Pause and listen. Okay, the question, virgin, unmarried women. What you going to tell the unmarried, the single people? Paul says, listen, now if you're engaged, go ahead and get married. Just get engaged. You committed? Okay. But if you do, you haven't sinned. Because Paul's saying it's better just to stay single. However, those who marry will face many troubles in this life. And I want to spare you this. And I will let you figure that one out on your own. Many troubles. He says it's a challenge. The two becoming one. In verse 29, what I mean, brothers and sisters, the time is short. From now on, those who have wives should live as if they do not. Those who mourn as if they do not, those who are happy as if they were not, those who buy something as if it were not theirs to keep, those who use the things of this world as if not engrossed in them, for this world is in its present form is passing away. It sounds like a contradiction. It sounds like a contradiction. Wait a minute, Paul. Wait a minute. You just said that we need to prioritize a spouse. Now you're coming along and you're saying from now on, those who have wives should live as if they do not. I'm confused. What's that next slide, Dale? What Paul was saying is we got to love our spouses. We got to encourage our spouses, but we got to make sure they were never meant to replace God. They were not meant to replace God. If at any point in time, once you become married, and your relationship with God becomes secondary, something's wrong. If at any point in time you were more committed to the mission And I'm not talking about being extreme. I know we had a marriage retreat last fall, and we talked about the mission, what Francis Chan and his wife talked about. And that's understandable. It's the mission. And there is a way to love God and still be your best for your spouse and for your children. There is a way to do that. It's going to be more challenging at times, but there is a way to do it. But whenever we take our marriage and we make our husband or our wife the God, and we can't be happy unless they give us all the attention, and we don't want them having other relationships, we don't want to practice hospitality, we just want him in that room so we can look at him by ourselves. There's something wrong with that. Brothers have a wife, and they want to control her schedule. They don't want her to go out with the sisters. They don't want her to spend money on encouragement gifts. You know, it's something wrong with that. Because we can't stop being Christians because we're married. In fact, the Bible says two are better than one. And we should be more committed and more joyful. Aren't we having a good time with this happiness series? Single people, are we having a good time? Yeah. Are you happy? Yeah. Yeah, married people, we're going to get you happy too. So, but really what it is we got to understand is all about God. It's all about God. We're going to do God's will. Because it's so easy to get caught up in the world. And basically, what Paul was saying is that we got to please God. We also have the responsibility, because we chose to be married, to please our spouse. But that is decisions that we made. Paul's advice, hey, it's better to be single. But, hey, I say it as a concession, not as a command. Now, you decide to get married, well, you got to go to Ephesians 5. You got to look at what it means to have a healthy marriage. That's what Paul was saying. And he says, you know, bottom line is this. Once in verse 33, a married man is concerned about the affairs of this world. How can he please his wife? And his interests are divided. An unmarried woman or virgin is concerned about the Lord's affairs. Her aim is to be devoted to the Lord in both body and spirit. But a married woman is concerned about the affairs of the world, how she can please her husband. In verse 35, I'm saying this for your own good, not to restrict you, but that you may live in a right way in undivided devotion to the Lord. Undivided devotion. And really, that can go so many different directions. Our careers can't take us away from God. Our hobbies can't take us away from God. Our children can't take us away from God. We still have to have devotion to God. And that's what Paul was saying. Say, listen, whatever you do, it's got to be an undivided devotion. And is it possible to have a great career and be a great disciple? To have a great marriage and be a great disciple? If we have it in perspective, to live for anything but God leads to breakdown and decay. Worshipping other things cannot deliver satisfaction because they were never meant to be gods. They were never meant to replace God. Only as an individual, you know whether or not Jesus is Lord. Your heart, nobody else can see your heart. You know whether or not Jesus is on the throne. If you are visiting here today, you say, you know what? I love God, but, you know, I just got a lot going on in my life. Then spend some time studying the Bible and understanding what it means to prioritize Jesus. Lordship. If you are a Christian and you have gotten off track, now is a good day to get back on track. And go back to that undivided devotion. Go back to that. You know what? I love God. I'm going to give God all I got. I'm going to serve. I'm going to love my spouse. I'm going to love my friends. I'm going to love my family. I'm going to love my children. And you know what? That leaves less time for us as individuals. Because the greatest amount of time we spend on ourselves trying to figure out what will make us happy. What we want. And really, all the Bible's saying now, you got to prioritize God, others, you. What? Yeah. Because most time it's us, then a little Jesus. But we spend most of our time thinking about ourselves. And the scriptures say you got to think about somebody else. So as we think about Jesus, we're going to take this communion. I want us to look at our lives and make sure, you know what? I want to keep that undivided devotion. I want to be the type of Christian that no matter what I do, Jesus is always first. My spouse knows he's first. My children knows he's first. My family, people know that Jesus is first and that I love them. Because really, that's how Jesus lived his life. God was first. Then it was us. Then it was him. Let us pray. Heavenly Father and God, we come before you right now. And God, we want to thank you so much for you designing marriage and for you coming up with a plan for how you want us to be married, God, and how you want us to find happiness in this world. I pray right now that you will be with us, God, as we take this communion, God, as we remember the death, the burial, and the resurrection, God. We remember what Jesus did for us and how he lived his life. And I pray, God, that we will also think about the future, God, and how we want to live for you. That for those of us who are single, that we will choose people who will help us to be our best for you. God, for those of us who are contemplating where we are in our walk with you, that we will be motivated by Jesus. Thank you, God, for the blood that was shed, God, and that we're going to take this juice that represents that, God, for the bread, God, that represents the body that was broken. And we ask these prayers in your son's name. Amen.